don't underestimate the power that each one of us has to come alongside somebody and just be there.
Welcome to Intrinsically Motivated, where we have conversations with experts in the field of addiction, recovery, and those personally affected by it, as we seek to mobilize the church to replace addiction and mental health challenges with flourishing.
On today's episode, we'll be sitting with United Methodist pastor Lisa Bryant. We'll talk about her experiences and stories of addiction and trauma, and how she has learned to practically navigate relationships within the world of addiction.
I'm Tucker Clements, audio engineer and editor for Uplift Appalachia, and this is Intrinsically Motivated.
The reason I wanted to have you on the podcast is because you've been kind of one of our big champions at Uplift for a long time. You brought us into your church a couple years ago when we first kind of got connected and all that. How did we end up getting connected at the beginning? How did you find what we were doing? And originally, was it something that was happening during the Holy Friendship Collaborative Day?
I was trying to think. I mean, it would be like towards the end of 2018, I guess.
Yeah.
Into maybe the first of 2019.
So this is like old world, like pre-COVID world, like before everything changed.
Yeah.
And so were you already interested in addiction and recovery? Was the Holy Friendship Collaborative, which was that organization that we kind of worked alongside for a while, was that kind of what opened your eyes to this need?
So I was serving in Saltville, Virginia, and it's a very small town, and I just noticed that there was a lot of drug activity and people who needed help. There was a lot of children being affected by substance abuse. And so I just felt like that something needed to be done. So it seems like, if I remember correctly, I just did some research and stumbled onto the Holy Friendship Collaborative and reached out and met Taranya.
Right, and it kind of went on from there. Yeah.
Went on from there and got involved with the Holy Friendship Collaborative and yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of that mission is what obviously bled right into what became Uplift Appalachia at the time. So you were serving in Saltville, Virginia. How long did you serve in Saltville?
6 years.
6 years. Yeah. Was that your first
full-time
appointment in ministry? How did you find your way into ministry? Did you always know that this was a thing you're going to be interested in, or did you just kind of stumble upon it at some point, or was it one of those you got voluntold that one day and all of a sudden here you are?
I grew up in the church, never thought that, no, I mean, other than, you know, just maybe teaching a Sunday school class or, you know, being involved in United Methodist Women, that's about as far as I ever went. But, you know, God had this plan, I think, way before I did, and I think he was probably calling me way before I listened.
Right. And that's how it always seems to be.
Yeah, and, you know, I spent several years arguing with him, and, yeah, that doesn't work, obviously. He wins all the time. So here I am.
And here you are. So I don't know what the process is. I obviously grew up Baptist. Mm-hmm. And so I'm still learning United Methodist Church stuff. Because honestly, one of the things that we've discovered since we've gotten into this whole motivating and recruiting churches, United Methodist Church has been probably the most active in responding and saying, we're ready to get going. So I don't know as much about kind of the way that United Methodist Church is structured. So how does that work, becoming a minister in the United Methodist Church? Is the process?
Yeah, it's a long process. So to be an ordained elder, we have to go to seminary. We have to have a master's in divinity from a United Methodist approved seminary, and so that's 3 years. And then after that, we spend time. Well, we through our seminary education, we're in candidacy, and then once we graduate, we go before the Board of Ordained Ministry, and we have to write paperwork and be approved by the Board of Ordained Ministry to be a provisional elder. And then we spend 3 years as a provisional in the what we call the REM process, the Residence in Ministry process. And so we're guided through that with a mentor, and we do more paperwork, and then we go before the Board of Ordained Ministry again and are interviewed, and our paperwork questioned, and so forth, and then we're approved for.
So it's a big commitment to kind of get in here. So you said you kind of felt like God was calling you early. How did you realize that that was the call that you had to say yes to?
So, like I said, I skirted it and argued with him. And a couple of things happened. I was about maybe 8 to 10 months after my mother passed away. Mm-hmm. I was in the grocery store, and I'm checking out, and I'm moving my things from the cart to the conveyor belt, and I feel like it's taking forever. And a lady comes up behind me, and I notice that she's kind of got tears coming out of her eyes, and okay, and I'm putting things on the conveyor belt, and God tells me, Lisa, I want you to pray with her. Okay, God, I'll pray for her. And I just continue about my business. No, Lisa, I want you to pray with her.
With, not for.
Right. Yeah. Okay, God, I will. Let me pay for my groceries and I'll pray for her. No, Lisa, I want you to pray with her. And it's like I almost said, okay, God, because I felt like, are people like, am I talking out loud? Are people looking at me and thinking I'm crazy? So, okay, I will. So I get everything out on the conveyor belt, and I turn to her, and I just ask her, I said, ma'am, are you okay? And she said, yeah, I'm okay. She said, my sister just passed away, and her favorite, I had to buy a cake mix, and I was in the cake mix aisle, and her favorite cake was red velvet, and I saw a red velvet cake mix, and it just made me think of her, and I'm just sad. And I said, you know, and I know, I said, my mother passed away almost a year ago, and there's things that I see that were just remind me of her. And I said, that's probably going to be the way it is for a while. And I said, would you mind if I pray with you? And she said, oh, no, please do. And I said, well, what was your sister's name? She said, Lisa. And so I started crying as I prayed and for her, and I pay for my groceries, and I'm like, all right, God, I get it. And along about that same time, honestly don't remember if this was before or after, but it was along the same time. It was in the spring. My son is getting ready to go on in the United Methodist Church. We do confirmation for our middle school age, and that's when they learn about our church and our polity and our history, and then they join the church. They make a choice to join the church. So we baptize as infants, but then they make a conscious decision to join the church around that age. So he's getting ready to go on a confirmation retreat. And I went into my church and went into my pastor's office specifically to ask about what time they were leaving on Friday.
Just a simple logistical question,
because I needed to know, do I need to bring his bag? Do I need to have his bag packed and with me when I pick him up from school and bring him straight here? Or can we go home and pack his clothes and get it right? And I walk in to the pastor's office, and that I like always my intention to ask that question. And I said, Robert, I think God's calling me into pastoral ministry. And like, I'm shocked at what came out of my mouth.
That wasn't the question I thought
wasn't
I was going to ask.
That wasn't the question I was going to ask. Yeah. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? But the thing is, when I said that out loud, like there was this just calmness that I could feel coming over my body, like just like that was the right thing to say. And so we went from there, and I had to call him back later and ask him, what time are you leaving on Friday?
The question I really meant to ask you was, yeah. And so there you were. And so then you kind of start down whole journey.
We started down that path.
And how long did that journey take for you till you finally got to your first full-time appointment in Saltville?
Let's see. That would have probably been, 4 years.
So 4 years till you end up in Saltville. So are you from this area originally? Were you
from Bluff City.
Bluff City. So you're like on this Tennessee side. So was Saltville a big culture shift for you? Or did you feel like you kind of immediately began to understand that city as you got there?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Saltville's interesting, and it's, you know, and I think through Taranya and Uplift, I met Jody. I can't remember her last name, but she did since get married, so.
I probably know the name, but I'm probably not going to.
Anyway, she was, she helped me to understand, you know, how communities, you know, oftentimes, that, you know, like you've got to really understand, and this was so true for Saltville, you've really got to understand what's going on in that community to be able to come alongside them and help. You can't go into a community and say, this is what you need to do because I know what you need to do.
Right.
You really have got to listen more to them and what their experiences have been before, you know, implementing something. So Saltville is very interesting, and they're very outsider-insider.
Yeah.
Like,
And I learned this mostly from you because we went up one day to kind of learn Saltville with you, and you kind of walked us through the town and taught us a little bit about the history and that sort of thing. And I just remember the way that we meet individuals, if we're going to minister to them, or if mm-hmm. we're looking at it from, you know, we do trauma-informed church trainings, and so much about it is being able to see people for who they are. But that whole city has its own unique identity as a people as well. And that's true of that city, but that same understanding of who the people in Saltville are isn't the same for the next town.
For the next town over.
Next town over, and we have to start that whole process.
All
over again, which is something that we've actually been honestly trying to do some research on and practice. Like, what's the best way to actually get to know folks? And I know my mom and another person that works with us just went up to Saltville one day, and they just went and ate lunch at the diner, and they talked to one person. They said, who should we talk to next? And they said, oh, you should go to this place. Oh, you should go to this place. And then the next place introduced them to the next person, and they just spent the whole day getting to know people that know Saltville. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like such a much more organic way, but also a lot more labor-intensive way to kind of approach ministry. And I think that sometimes can be a turnoff to some people, especially nowadays when it's like, I want to know something, I want to learn something. There's an AI chat that I can type something into, it'll give me an answer, or I can hop online and I can know something, or I can, what's the best way to help somebody with this, and it'll give me it. It's like, we want to just kind of be to the finish line, and we don't always want to put in the time and the effort and the work, and it's because it is tiring and it is hard, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong along the way, and a lot of I can say the wrong things the wrong way, or I can talk to the wrong person who has a grudge with the person down the street and say, I just talked to this person. Now this person, you know, but you're not going to know that.
But you're not going to know that until
you just kind of start getting in there.
And who are we emulating? Who are we emulating? I mean, what did Jesus do? He didn't, you know, ask the Pharisees who supposedly know
who are the movers and shakers that I should be hanging out with so I can be popular, right?
No. Yeah. He went and he broke bread with the people.
Right. I didn't come for the people who are healthy. I came for the people who are sick. And it was a time investment and a sacrificial. And it was obviously challenging. It obviously was hard. Obviously, it cost him a whole lot of reputation. You know, all these things.
Yeah, and more.
And ultimately his life, because he's not putting himself in a position where he's going to be liked by the people of what we would say were the authority and all that. And so to have to kind of humble yourself and say, I have to know what I don't know, and I have to go humbly, you know, ask people to slowly allow me into their life is a difficult thing. What were some of the challenges of doing ministry in that area?
I will say that was a challenge, the outsider-insider. But, you know, I think once I realized that, and I just have to be genuine and you know, care about them and what their experience is, and you know, it's almost like it just became that, you know, I became an insider.
Right.
You know, because I became trusted. I became, you know, the person that they would call when they, you know, needed somebody to talk to. And I don't, you know, just going in and having the title of pastor or reverend, whatever, is not going to get you that.
Right.
You've got to earn that that trust for people to open their lives up to
Well, because and one of the things that we've learned as we've tried building relationships with folks or trying to connect people in the church with different ministry opportunities is just like sometimes we in the church can have kind of that stigma toward people that are struggling. They have that same assumption about us as well.
Us.
And some, so like you're saying, coming in with that title can sometimes be just as much of a hindrance to anything, you know? Sometimes even having that title can be a hindrance
to
ministry. Right. And so we have to, again, I think a lot of this starts with humility, realizing, you know, even if we think, even if we know we have ultimate answers for folks, right? Like we have the whole, you know, revealed word of God. We have exactly right. we have the playbook, which is what we're realizing more and more continues to just be true. If we just do what the Bible says, right. things seem to work out really well. But even if we have all the answers, if we can't, you know, find a way into somebody's life to be able to actually show them what right. those answers are, or build up enough of a relationship they can trust us, that sort of thing, then it's not going to amount to anything. And so, you know, like you said, having to just come in and really slowly build some of those relationships and just earn that trust, I think, is one of those things that, you know, it's easy, I think, a lot of times in churches to establish trust within the Christian community already. You mm-hmm. know, you can develop an easy relationship with other pastoral staffs or you know, church folks. Like they'll love your church right away because they're already in the church, but it's building these relationships with folks who are not so close to Jesus that takes a lot more time, and it's right. hard to get people excited sometimes about that kind of ministry.
And if you think about those easy relationships, it's usually people just like us. It's the difference. The differences are those are the harder relationships
right.
to build. Because we have othered each other.
Right.
You know, we have put this distance between us because of whatever difference it is. You know, you're different than me because of this or whatever. And we have separated. And there's a trust issue. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the times that becomes that. Some of that's, I feel like we don't actually believe that the similarities between us and other people are there. You know, it's easy to right. say, I've got it all figured out and you don't, or right. I understand this and you don't, or you don't agree with me, therefore I'm going to separate myself from you about whatever it may be.
Whatever it is.
You know, yeah. But at the same time, finding those common threads is really helpful. And so much of what we talk about when we talk about trauma-informed care is just being able to see people differently
yeah.
and knowing that just like you have your own history, they have their own history, and that might have led them into a different direction. They might have, but it's still... their past has affected where they are now, and that's why yeah. they find themselves in the situation that they find themselves in. And it's just having that eye-opening experience. And I can see, because every conversation I've ever had with you is like, you can see what that ideal, you know, church and community relationship can look like. And specifically within, you know, like we're talking about addiction and recovery. Like, I know you can see it. How have you tried to nudge people that are in your church or in your community in that direction at different points?
So this is one of my favorite stories. So yes, we've been working together for a long time. I had actually set up before COVID, had started to work with the recovery court in Smith County, and we're gonna have community service at our community garden. We're gonna offer community service, and then COVID and everything shuts down, blah blah blah. So it took a while to get that back up going. So we finally get the connection. In the meantime, like one of the people over it, they had changed directors or changed people. So anyway, we finally get back in connection, and we are getting ready at my church in Saltville at Madame Russell, getting ready for a big district-wide worship service. And so the church, like most of our churches now, they're aging, you know, not able to do what they once did, but they're all worried that the whole district is going to come to their church and this and this and this and this and this needs to be done, this needs to be cleaned, we need to, you know, what are we going to do? So I get in touch with the director of recovery court, and you know, I said, "Can we have a Saturday where we have a cleaning day, and you know, wipe out their community service hours for that week in that one day, and we schedule it?" And so the church members come, and we served breakfast, and then we served lunch, and we ate together. We ate together in the morning before we started, and started with coffee and donuts and muffins, and then had prayer, and we went out and divvied up. We had the Madame Russell cabin. Part of us cleaned that. Some of us cleaned inside, some of us cleaned outside. I mean, we were just all over the place. And then we came back together for lunch. And I'm kind of bouncing back and forth between different places, and there was probably 12 people who were involved in community or involved in the recovery court, getting their community service hours. But there was also some of their family members that had come. And then there's throughout the day, maybe in and out, 20 church members. But I'm going back and forth, and there, the church is a massive stone building, and there were some outside parts like guttering that needed to be cleaned really right. bad. And so they have this ladder that, for real, you like one person cannot even carry the ladder. It's huge.
Right.
And so here is my treasurer, who is a bank executive, and a gentleman who had just started going into recovery court, just entered recovery court. And they're carrying the ladder around the building together, and they're taking turns climbing up the ladder, with one person climbing up the ladder and then one person holding it.
Right.
And I'm thinking there has to be like this element of trust between the two, but because they're taking turns. And I mean, this is not, I wouldn't get up on that ladder for anything.
Nor would I. That is not me.
But here they go, and they're doing it, and they're working together, and they're laughing, and they're carrying this ladder around, and they went all around the building, and that's the kingdom of God.
That's an amazing visual. Just the working together, the being together. It's like,
yes.
It's like two completely different stories, yes, helping to work together on that same task.
Yes, and I chilled up just thinking about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was beautiful. I was like, this is the kingdom of God right here. Mm-hmm. Right here. People of different backgrounds, of different, you know, I like to say, I've said this in sermons so many times, like, guess what, friends? When we get to heaven, there's going to be people that have committed the same sins as that I have committed, and there's going to be people that have committed different sins. They're all going to be up there. You know?
Right.
So I just felt like, so anyway, you know, when we unpack that as a church, and, you know, the church not only saw the benefit of, you know, having help cleaning, but the relationships that were built. So it just so turns out that that gentleman that was going up and down on the ladder with the bank executive, he and his children, his two sons came with him, and they started coming to church.
Right.
And they felt so loved. Those boys, about maybe a year after that, I'll never forget that same bank executive, the youngest son, he comes up to me and he says, "Miss Lisa, you know how Gabe," who was another boy in the church, "Gabe comes in and he has that thing and he lights the candles?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You think I could do that?" And I said, "Oh, most definitely. Most definitely." And I said, but I tell you what, I said, "Let's get somebody to help you," because we had one candle that's really, really tall. I said, "Because, you know, I can't even reach that candle." So I get that same bank executive, and he walks down the aisle with the candle lighter and helps him light those candles.
Yeah.
And just the smile on both of them, both right. of their faces, was just so wonderful. And then a few weeks later, we were actually singing "Jesus Loves Me" in the service. And I look down, and this little boy is signing "Jesus Loves Me."
Right.
And so he was so excited to teach everybody "Jesus Loves Me" in sign language.
That's so cool. That's so cool. Yep. And I mean, okay. And when you think about that, it's like all of that was born out of just such a simple yeah. little task. Let's get together and let's clean some stuff. You know, a lot of times what we're talking about from Uplift's perspective is maybe it's starting a recovery meeting, which seems like a big ask. But it could also just start with giving somebody a ride, you know, from their house to their job, or from their house to maybe a court appointment if we're talking about folks who are in recovery. You know, all of these things can just start with, it's just a little simple start. It's just an opportunity to start building some sort of relationship. It's an opportunity to start connecting with people. Mm-hmm. And to see, you know, just from that example, it's like we're cleaning some gutters and all of a sudden your kid's teaching the church sign language for "Jesus Loves Me." Like,
right.
Like that's the kind, those are the kinds of stories that we keep getting to see, but it sometimes seems like we can get so bogged down by just the day-to-day kind of inward focus of our ministry, or the inward, you know, mechanics of being the church, or the people that we have meaningful relationships with. And I'm not trying to knock having meaningful relationships within the church as well. No. You need the people that are building you up so that you can go pour yourself out into the lives of other people. You need, like, we need both, but we sometimes can get so distracted or just so busy with good things within the church that we lose sight of, you know, I'm going to go be sacrificial with some of my time or with my resources or whatever it is to go start building that relationship outside the church. And I think that it's one of those, when we talk about it out loud like this, it makes so much sense.
It does.
But we just don't always get there.
Right.
You know, and I just wonder from your experience, what have been some of the things that maybe you've seen that have been like, what holds us back as the church? How could, because, you know, I said earlier, you know, I've seen, you know, a lot of the times when we've put out big asks, hey, we want to get the church involved in recovery ministry, United Methodist Church has been ready to go a lot of times. And a lot of times they jump right in. Sometimes it lasts for a long time. Sometimes there's, you know, and this happens with me too. There's like the short-term excitement and then, you know, kind of the realities or practicality of trying to get it to work just right don't always pan out. But I'm just curious from your perspective, A, what makes the United Methodist Church so ready to jump in and serve? And B, what are some of the challenges that you've seen faced with either getting the church excited or kind of sustaining that effort for a long period of time?
So I think you're right. The United Methodist Church has done a wonderful job overall coming, wrapping around. You know, why? That's because individual churches have nurtured people, have been involved in, and have shared those stories like what I just did. I mean, you know, I can think of so many, Lebanon Memorial in Lebanon, Virginia, their recovery ministry impacted so many people, and there's peer recovery specialists that came out of that recovery program, you know, all over Virginia. And so through that, there has even been some people who have gone into ministry who were in recovery in these churches. And so we get to know those people and we're like, you know,
obviously we want to do something too.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, because as you know, there's still a stigma. I don't know. Do you want me to share my story about the beginning of it?
You're absolutely, you share whatever you want to share. I love to hear stories.
So I think you've probably heard this.
I probably have, but I bet there's people that are going to be listening to this that haven't.
Sure. So I go to Saltville in July of 2018, my first full-time appointment. But I'm ready and raring to go, you know, and we're told, you know, when you go to a new appointment, you don't, you know, you don't really change a lot of things for your first year because you don't want to, you know, go in and... So I'm cognizant of that, but I see this need. You know, I see, to be honest with you, you know, I had congregants who would call me and ask for prayer for their grandchildren who got picked up again for using drugs, for their, you know, niece or nephew, whatever. But it was never a prayer request that we could share. That was always confidential.
For you and me to talk about, yeah.
Yes, please pray for him, but yeah. But I mean, then you'd have to be blind to drive through Saltville and not see it, you know.
Right. I drove through Saltville with you, and you'd have to be blind not to see it.
And so I remember, and this, I want to say maybe January of 2019, maybe a little later, I can't remember, but I had found out about the Holy Friendship Collaborative and that the study that they had developed with Duke. And so it, you know, I think I had gone through that cohort and done the study. And I thought, you know, this just looks at, you know, our gifts and our it was a gardening metaphor, which I thought was good for, you know, a rural community. And it, you know, what's in your soil that you can used to nurture, you know, in what way?
Right.
And so I come before my board, we're sitting at a long table, and You know, I want us to just go through this study and see, you know, what, how we can help, you know, and maybe we're not cut out for recovery ministry, but maybe we can offer childcare while, you know, the church down the street offers a recovery ministry, or, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know what, let's just do this study and have open minds, and, you know, because we all know that, you know, this town is pretty hit pretty hard with substance abuse. And so I will never forget that, you know, I mean, in my church, Madam Russell was, and I found this out later, was known as the rich church, and the, which they weren't, they were just normal people, you know, but for some reason, through history, which, you know, and again, you got to find
there's
out.
There's reasons that there's people reasons think, that, and there's you reasons know, you got to talk years, to everybody, yeah.
Yeah, through the years, that was the company's executives church and whatever. But I can remember a lot of retired teachers on my board, and some, you know, like retired engineers, the bank executive, you know. But my chair at the time was sitting right across from me, and he just kind of says, yeah, I don't think we have that problem here. And then it went around the table. Everybody agreed with him and said, not really. It doesn't really affect us. And I'm just like stunned, like, and so I'm kind of mad.
Right.
And sometimes when I get mad like that, I just started crying. And I couldn't, I'm like, okay, Lisa, you got to get control of yourself. You got to just, okay. So I just like, okay, let's talk about something else. Let's move on to the next agenda, Adam. And I just, because I didn't
We'll table know, this one and we'll come back this. Again.
Yeah. I was like, I didn't know what to say, what to like.
I could see it'd be one of those things. It'd be one thing if it was like, we don't know how to do anything about that, so we don't know where to start, so we're not going to. But it's another thing to say, it's not even there.
Right.
Right. If you'd been pushed back, we don't think we want to get involved because we don't feel comfortable with it. That's a
different answer.
We can work with that.
But yeah, like I was afraid if I kept on, I was going to say, well, you're lying. You know? Right. And I couldn't do that. That's not the right response.
That's not the right place. Yeah.
So I just... Yeah. Okay. Let's go on. So then we had a very good youth group, and the youth group was very unique in that we only had two youth whose families attended the church. The youth group was friends of these kids, and several of them were affected by substance abuse.
Right.
Their parents, their grandparents. And so we got kind of a new kid that spring. And we a lot of times we'd serve dinner on Sunday evenings. And I noticed that he would eat and eat and eat. And so I started picking him and, well, taking a couple of them out to eat, you know, mainly him, because I realized, and he would want to take food home, and we'd always let him. But anyway, again, eat and eat and eat. So I just started, you know, talking to him, you know, building a relationship, and come to find out, he's a senior in high school, but he's already turned 18. He wants to graduate high school and go into the Army because he wants to do better for himself than his family.
Right.
Because he lives in a house with his mom, his dad, his uncle, uncle's wife, and grandmother, and all five are addicted to substances.
Right.
And party all night long. And he's been getting in trouble because he doesn't sleep at night and he oversleeps for school. And so then come to find out, he actually found an unlocked door in the back of our little town library that led to a crawl space, a dirt-floored crawl space, where he would go and sleep at night so he could get a good night's sleep and not sleep through his alarm and make it to school.
Yeah, man.
So I knew that I needed to tread lightly and be careful how I asked for help for him, because I didn't want him to lose access to this little crawl space. But I also, and you know, knew that we needed to help him in some way.
Uh-huh.
So what we did was we provided some ready-to-eat food, some shelf-stable food, and we supplied a plastic container, a small plastic container with a lid that he could store in the crawl space with utensils and so forth. And so he had that. And then my parsonage had a back porch that, like, I could leave unlocked, but it was covered. And so I had another tub, and I would replenish things.
Right.
And he could just go by my parsonage and get the food out and take it and store it in his little storage container.
Yeah.
So, and the way I did this was I talked to our Bible study, who was a lot of retired teachers. And so they were like, you know, we got to help. So I didn't mention any names, but Easter Sunday morning, the youth did our sunrise service, and they figured out who he was because they had seen him walking around town, because he lived near town, so they would see him walk. And so so what happened was, after the Easter sunrise service, when they figured out who he was, they would see him walking around town, and they would stop and pick him up and take him to dinner. They would stop and take him to their homes to have dinner with them. There was one family who took him and let him spend the night there and get a shower and wash his clothes and have a good night's sleep. And then they came to me and said, Lisa, we got to do something.
It's here. We can't deny it.
We can't deny it.
Yeah.
And so it's almost putting a face.
And it's not even that he was the one who was struggling with the substance use.
Right.
It was the people around him.
But we
want to help. We want to help him. But we also want to, if we can help the people that are in his life, that we are helping him too. And it's like you said, it's there, and it's inescapable.
It's inescapable. So, I mean, that summer, listen, they supplied him with absolutely everything he needed to enlist in the Army. You know, he had to have so many pairs of new underwear and pajamas and all this stuff. They provided it all in a suitcase, and he went off in the Army.
Yeah, have you heard from him? I have not. Oh.
I have not, no, well, and I've asked about him, but
we eagerly anticipate hearing the follow-up someday.
I know.
Someday. So obviously you're now here at Glen Alpine in Kingsport. So, and this is another interesting question. This is for me, just understanding UMC stuff, because you all kind of move from church to church. Mm-hmm. Is there a set schedule for that, or is it just kind of you're there for a certain amount of time and then?
There really isn't. I mean, it differs from church to church and pastor to pastor. I moved to Saltville. That was, my first full-time appointment, and that was the closest and best appointment. It used to be that we fully itinerated, and we still do. We sign up to be itinerant, so which means that we could move anywhere across our conference, which is from Chattanooga to Oak Ridge to almost Richmond, I think.
I was going to say, somewhere past Saltville.
Yeah. And it used to be that, you know, pastors were males and their wives were, if they worked outside the home, it were teachers. And so they could just move all over and get a job. And, you know, that's not the way it is anymore. So the bishop and the cabinet really try to keep pastors, you know, recognize, you know, they have spouses, they have children that, you know, need to remain consistent in schools and so forth. So my goal was to get back to Kingsport where we own our home. So,
right. The reason I ask is because I'm just curious, because, you know, you come into the church in Saltville and you're not immediately necessarily trying to shake everything up, but then you slowly start to work and you slowly get a little bit of momentum there. And then you've moved here. Was it hard to kind of, did it feel like a reset, or did it feel like I can kind of continue with the momentum that I was starting to build there as I'm coming back into Kingsport, or have there been challenges in kind of that transition for you as well?
Yes, yeah. And some of both. I mean, like, my passion for ministry and for walking alongside people in recovery from whether it be substance abuse or just recovering from sin, because if you think about it, we're all in recovery. I feel like that momentum, you know, I'm ready and raring to go. But it's different, you know, and part of that is the building of trust between, you know,
you're learning a new community all over again.
A little bit of both.
So I'll kind of ask you this just kind of as we're starting to wrap things up. So what are the things that you are hopeful for, excited about in ministry, just for you personally? What are some of the things that you're hopeful to get to do or see get accomplished? And then what are some ways that kind of the global church, like the big church, can kind of support one another in helping people get to do the kind of ministry things that you think you're excited to get to do or feel called specifically mm-hmm. to do?
So one thing, and I like to tell, you know, like I said before, our churches are aging, and, you know, until you are looking at Jesus face to face, you have a purpose on this earth, you know, and so don't tell me I'm too old, we can't do anything because we're just an old congregation. No, you know, you can form a prayer partnership with the elementary school. You can send notes of encouragement to people who are struggling or people who, you know, what? There's so many things that even someone who is confined to a bed can do. So don't tell me you're too old, one. And two, you know, don't underestimate the power that each one of us has to come alongside somebody and just be there. I have one more story.
I'm ready.
The very first time I went to recovery court, they have recovery court every Thursday afternoon. The very first time, I just happened to sit down behind three women, and I noticed, and they call them each up, and they talk about, you know, what happened that week, you know, you did this really good, you've accomplished all your goals and blah, 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 or you messed up on this, you know, you're going to have to, you know, this week you're going to have an extra hour of community service or, you know, whatever. But what I noticed was these three girls were like cheering each other on, and I loved that. And so when it was all over, I just kind of leaned forward and I said, I love how you all are so supportive of each other. And so this is my very first time, and they don't know me from anybody, and they all just looked at me like, who are you and why are you even talking to us? And that's okay. It's okay. And what I realized is I have since attended all three of their graduations.
Yeah.
And hugged them super hard when they graduated. But after, the thing is, I kept coming. I kept showing up on Thursday afternoon. That first time, they didn't know if I just came to look at them and see what they were doing. Because oftentimes people in that situation are looked at but not seen. And so there's already, like you said, a distrust because of my title, maybe because, you know, I look like I'm dressed nice. I look like I've got it all together, because oftentimes people have looked at them and judged them.
Right.
Rather than seeing who they are. Taking the time to just listen and see them.
And then being back when you say you'll be back. And being there again and again. And it may take again and again and again before they even start to open up anything.
Right.
And that's kind of the, you know, like I was saying earlier, we look for that quick return on investment, and it's almost never going to work that way, especially in this kind of ministry, which is why it's so important that we just start now, because it's going to take a long time to get there. And if we don't start, we're just setting ourselves back another week, another month, another year, or whatever it is, because it's going to take a while. But that's what's so, if we can completely kind of rewrite the narrative of what it means to be the church in ministry for people that are struggling, that need the church to step in and minister to them, why wouldn't we start? And it's I get that it's scary, and I get there are limitations, and I get that, you know, people are going to sometimes look at us, you know, why are you talking to me? Just like that. Like, why would you even care? Because they've never experienced that before. Right. And so it's so tempting to just say, I'm not even try. It's going to be hard, or it's not going to work the first time, you know. And just to kind of hear, you know, from your experience, it's like, it really does work if we just stay committed for the long run and just keep kind of pressing forward.
Think about how many people the Samaritan woman had encountered over her times of going to the well. But only one time was she really seen. Was she seen for not for how many husbands she's had or who she's living with now, whatever. Not for that reason, but seen as a child of God. And what does she do? She goes back and tells
everybody about it.
Tells everybody about it.
You got to come meet this guy. He's worth it.
Yeah.
Because he thought I was worth talking to.
Because I was worth talking to, yeah.
Yeah, that's a... I might steal that.
Go for it.
I'm going to steal it.
I stole it.
It's all in the Bible, so we're constantly stealing it from whoever wrote that book, right? Well, this has been super helpful for me, just encouraging for me, just because, again, it's obviously one of our big mission things is we're trying to motivate the church, and I still firmly believe that that has to kind of start with church leadership. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, we can get individuals in churches excited, but if the church from a leadership perspective isn't also buying in, mm-hmm. or not saying that every leader has to be involved in addiction or recovery ministry, but if there's not this kind of understood buy-in and encouragement of the church that I'm going to support you as you do this, and it's a good thing that you want to do this, it's not going to last.
Right.
It's going to fizzle out, because then the next thing that church leadership gets excited about, that's going to be the next thing. And so just to get to hear from church leaders that get it, mm-hmm. and want it and see this need and see that it should be us. And I love what you said, like, you're still here for a reason. Like, there's no point where there's no retirement.
No.
From Christianity. Retirement is meeting Jesus, and we're not there yet. And if we're not there, we got to keep going.
Yep.
And so just for me personally, it's super encouraging. And I'm sure it's going to be personally encouraging for people that are hearing this, because that's kind of the heart that I'm hoping that we can develop. And it's hard. That was the thing that we were most excited about when we first got started. Like, we're going to go tell the church about just how many people are struggling with addiction, and they're going to rally. And sometimes, and every now and then they do, but a lot of times it's, that's awesome what y'all are doing. But to just hear that it's there, like mm-hmm. the church has it, it's just we got to kind of figure out how to bottle up what you found and say, this is the thing, and get that to the rest of the church as well.
And I think Uplift Appalachia has just such a great model. I mean, what you have a captive, you're in a car or in a vehicle with someone.
How would you like me to give you 1 hour of opportunity for ministry twice a week? I can give you that right now. I give it to you 8 hours a week. You want it? You got the time? Let's go. That's like, and it's going to be hard, and you're going to have to learn a lot, and you're going to mess it up sometimes, and that's okay. Right. And we're going to be right there to walk alongside you, and you're going to have pastors that are encouraged to, you know, support you, that are going to be there to back you up and support you, and all. It's like, you're not doing it alone. And that's the thing that we can't do it alone. And that's what's so beautiful about being the church is we're not alone.
Right.
We just all have to kind of get to where we're going all in the same direction on some of these things. And so, So thank you being super encouraging and hearing your passion again. I know we've talked about some of these things before, but I love getting to hear these kinds of stories because it just kind of reminds me that this is what we're in here for, and this is why we do what we do. So thank you so much.
And I love telling them because it rejuvenates me.
Yeah. So now we're going to go out. We're going to go run through a brick wall, and we're going to go save some folks. It'll be awesome. Yeah.
This has been a podcast powered by Uplift Appalachia. To learn more, you can find us at upliftappalachia.org.